welcome into another edition of New Track Record. Caleb Hatch and Justin Kinney with you. Hello, Justin.
Hello.
How are we?
Oh, we're doing well. You know, it was 60 degrees today. Fake spring.
Yeah.
Enjoy it.
First fall spring here in Indiana.
Yes.
For those of you who are outside of Indiana or outside the Midwest, whether you're in the U.S. or internationally, first off, thanks for listening. Second, Indiana does this weird thing where there's like a random 60 degree day in February every year, and at least one, sometimes two or three. Mm-hmm. So we're having that right now. So we're enjoying it, but I'm sure it'll be brutal, you know, here next week. That's just how this always works.
That's how it rolls. So we had 60 today, it's supposed to be 60 tomorrow, and then a week from today basically is 39 degrees, where it should be this time of year. But, you know, you mix in some days like this, it makes the other, you know, cold weather a little bit more tolerable.
Fahrenheit, not Celsius. Also,
yes, yeah,
for we're an international
Fahrenheit,
audience.
Fahrenheit. And, you know, it's race weekend next weekend if you're into Daytona. Can't wait. Had the Rolex 24 a couple weeks ago, so we're inching closer.
Had the Clash last weekend, which we did not catch any of. They moved it from Sunday to Saturday.
Yeah, which was...
worked out.
I thought about this. I mean, can you imagine if IndyCar tried to do that somewhere? There'd just be no way. But it's the amount of money that's given to these tracks because of the TV deal is kind of like,
And it's an exhibition race,
yep.
And it was extreme circumstance.
I do tend to believe that they probably didn't sell a lot of tickets for Sunday. I don't think they're moving that race if there's, say, 50,000 people with tickets.
Correct. It was a good event the first year. Ticket sales have plummeted, as one would expect for something like that, and moving it to a different location was probably the next thing. So kind of like IndyCar and doing any sort of all-star race, I get that they're trying thermal, but you can't like sell tickets really for that.
Not for you and I, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And most of us for that matter.
But, these are the things that IndyCar obviously needs to try moving forward. And to be fair, thermal is a step in that direction.
It's something.
If they move forward with Argentina, I get people are upset about, you know, an exhibition non-points paying race, but this is another way to reach a new audience. South America, I mean, you have a lot of fans in South America. You have an Argentinian driver, Argentinian owned team, at least co-owned team. So if that happens, great. If not, they tried. And we'll see what happens.
It'll make a lot of money for the teams regardless.
Yes. I mean, over 200K per leader circle entry team, which that's why you do these things. So it's a start. We'll see what happens, but we'll also see what happens. We got a lot to get to this week in terms of storylines in the future of the Indy 500. No, it's not going away, but one of the key aspects that people love about it could be, we'll get to that. Also, this week we have an update on some possibilities for Dale Coyne Racing. We have more concert announcements for the Iowa weekend. We have IndyCar trading cards, which we've covered in a previous episode. These were coming. Well, the news is official today, so we'll give you the details on that and more. That's all to come on this week's episode. So let's start things off. And of course, the story of the week, and that has to do with IndyCar considering, this is a headline from Nathan Brown of the Indy Star, IndyStar.com. IndyCar owners weigh guaranteed Indy 500 entries as part of new membership program, aka guaranteed spots to start the Indy 500. Now, before everyone freaked out about this, I remember reading these articles 5 years ago because Roger Penske said in March of 2019 that he was in favor of full season cars deserving guaranteed entries at the Indy 500. So nothing's changed with the exception, of course, that he owns the series. Now, he wasn't the only one who said that. Now, he led that charge back in 2019, but then come Long Beach time, Michael Andretti, Chip Ganassi also mentioned they were in favor. And a lot of the owners, after talking with Nathan Brown, mentioning that, they're in favor of this move. I see the positives and negatives of this. First off, going to a charter-type system, which IndyCar has been exploring. We've covered that before. That's something where, in theory, it sounds good, but the reality is the assets just simply aren't worth probably the cost to buy into a charter. If a team is going to sell, I don't know if you're able to get that kind of money out of it And that's where I guess I have some questions. And of course, with the Indy 500 itself, I have a lot of questions there as well.
Well, that's one of the things why, if we're talking about charters, why IndyCar is considering this guaranteed spot in the 500, because it would add value to those charters. If you have a full-time charter, you're in the Indianapolis 500 every single year. I know this is blown up on social media. The traditionalists are out in force. Oh my gosh, you can't do this, blah, blah, blah. 25-8 was the most devastating thing in the history of sport, you know, for some people. I just have never kind of bought into that. I kind of look at it like this is, take the NFL model where Roger Goodell, yes, he's the leader of the NFL, but he is basically there to make the owners money. Okay. He's an employee of the owners. And his job, first and foremost, is to make sure that the owners are making as much money as possible. Of course, you can say, well, player safety too over there. Yes, yes, yes. But primarily, he's there to make sure all of the franchises in the NFL are making money. Now you look at Roger Penske's side of things, and you could say he's in a similar boat. Yes, he needs to look at the health of the series and what fans want, blah, blah, blah. But he also, in a way, answers to the owners, because how many times have we seen owners basically rebel and get somebody fired that was leading the series? I mean, let's go through the list, or not, because I don't know how much time we have.
I don't think we have enough time for that today.
But you're looking at it and saying, okay, how does Roger Penske and his corp and Penske Corp solidify their hold on the IndyCar series? Well, first and foremost, you would say, was making the series owners, team owners, as much money as possible. And charter systems, in theory, would do that. And adding value to those charters would be guaranteed spots in the Indianapolis 500. To me, the days of 40, 45, 50 plus cars trying to make the Indianapolis 500 are gone. And I don't know if we ever get back to at least 50. I mean, I could see 40 at some point, you know, if we have more than two OEMs, but the days of 50 plus are gone. So basically you're shrinking it down, and you know, you can go, every situation is different on this team missing the 500 and what happened and what didn't happen. But by and large, I think if you look at it and you say, if these teams are willing to invest upwards of, let's say, $6 to $8 to $10 million per entry per year, then it makes sense to me. And I know people are going to hate on me. It makes sense to me to guarantee a spot in the Indianapolis 500. I know against goes against all tradition and history and all that stuff, but you kind of got to look at it in terms of the financials of the series. It's a fledgling series. You have team owners, many of which are losing money in this venture in IndyCar. And you just kind of look at it as, how do you protect your owners as much as possible?
I'm going to push back on that, because I want to take a look at in recent years. So not going back, you know, like you said, when we had 40 entries, right, which IndyCar hasn't had 40 entries for the Indy 500 since what, 2011, I believe, was the last time we had that number.
Like 20 years, not 13.
But we go back. So last year, Stefan Wilson, Cusick Motorsports, which partnered with Ryan Reinbold, missed the race. So that's a one-off team. It was a partnership. Stefan Wilson, obviously not back with Cusick, but Cusick is back this year. Okay. So that's not even a full-time entry. So not impacted.
I wouldn't say it's not impacted.
Well, okay. I got to correct myself, because Graham Rahal technically missed the race, but he raced in that car with Stefan Wilson's injury. And we've seen this before, right? With sponsors. So United Rentals reached an agreement, and Rahal and everyone reached an agreement for that to be on that car along with Stefan's sponsors. We saw it in 2011 with Ryan Hunter-Reay and Andretti buying Foyt's car, knocking out Bruno Junqueira, right, to keep DHL. And, you know, Andretti said, you know, we would have lost DHL if we didn't do that. It's like, but you did do that. And here's the thing. Graham Rahal and United Rentals got more exposure for missing the race than he did on race day riding around in an entry that was never competitive.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, so if he would have started 32nd and been a non-factor, he's not as big of a story as he was.
From a partner standpoint, yes, you want to be in the race, but you're going to slap that logo on other team cars or an entry that you buy out, and you're going to get a lot of publicity.
But doesn't that kind of take away, because what are the big examples of teams missing? Like last year, for example, I mean, it worked out for Graham Rahal.
Graham Rahal finished 22nd.
But he ended up in the race anyway.
Uncompetitive. Yeah.
You know, but that's the thing is like, we've seen instances over the past 10 years of full-time entries not qualifying and then finding a way into the race. So what's it matter if we guaranteed spots? Because they're figuring out ways to get in the race anyway. That's my thing.
My thing is they didn't even have to spend a dime, as far as we know, because Stephen Wilson was injured.
Yeah, and unfortunate circumstances. But
they were able to work around that and bring him into the field, bring Rahal into the field. So we didn't have any bumping in 22. Then you go to 2021, and you had Charlie Kimball with AJ Foyt. That was a third car. They were too slow. RC Anderson, Top Gun Racing. That was a one-off entry. So outside of Graham Rahal, which again, he was still able to compete, and I'd argue there's more value for a sponsor because you're getting your picture and stories on social media. You're getting support. People supporting that sponsor, if that's like a drive, like you're getting more value out of it, I would argue, in the aftermath, than you would qualifying 32nd and riding around, you know, between 25th and 33rd all day, or even just outside the top 20. So Kimball, third car out. Okay. Foyt's still around. RC Anderson, Top Gun Racing. Top Gun Racing was done after that. RC Anderson back because he and his father owned the car. We had no bumping. You go back to 2020, no bumping, 2019. You had Carlin and McLaren partnered with Carlin. This is one where it's a little different, but you have Alonso and McLaren. They have a lot of money, a lot of funding. They were back in 2020, right? Carlin was also back in 2020. Granted, it was just with Max Chilton in one car as opposed to the two or the three that they had in 2019, right? So that's the change there. 2018, you have Hinchcliffe and Arrow. Again, he missed the race, but yep, they got a lot of publicity out of it. He was back in a ride. That team was back in 2019. No changes. And then you have Pippa Mann, who has not returned to the Indy 500 since that time in 2018. Or no, she did in 2019. So she even returned the next year. But that's a team... for her with Dale Coyne Racing, I mean, they didn't go anywhere. So I guess I don't buy into the argument that these sponsors are going to bail because they haven't.
Well, I mean, that's tough to say because where would some of these teams be if they were in the field? I think you're kind of looking at it as like, well, they came back, nothing was wrong. Well, that's not exactly fair in terms of who knows what's going
year
on behind the
year,
scenes.
Year to year, though, they were back. And isn't that the ultimate comparison?
Well,
Carlin had other issues that...
Yeah, but if Carlin... Here's the thing with Carlin. If you were guaranteed spots in the Indianapolis 500, Carlin may have come overseas and said, you know what, we're going to invest and buy a charter or two charters and going to be full-time from the jump because we're guaranteed in the Indianapolis 500. Okay, so you got to look at it this way, okay? So instead, Carlin comes over. They're a fledgling unit. At one point in whatever year, they only have one of their three cars, and that was, to me, was the death knell of that team. If one of their three cars makes the 500 and they were ineffective after that, they were trying to get to a full-time team. But what if Carlin comes over and says right away, there's two charters available, I'm buying those, and we're a full-time team from the jump. And who knows, maybe Carlin is still in the IndyCar series right now. So it's always tough to play the what-if game, but I see other paths that make sense. I think my basis comes down to you should protect your current team owners. And as much as possible, they're the ones investing millions of dollars in your sport, much more than us fans are investing in. The key to this sport, if you don't have team owners, you don't have a series. And to me, I know the traditionalists hate it. I hate it too. My favorite part of Indy 500 qualifying weekend is bumping. And it's not, this doesn't mean you're still not going to have bumping, but
why would a one-off team show up?
Because you can still race the Indianapolis 500.
But the plan that they looked at was having full-time teams get a cap of three charters. So wouldn't a full-time team have their, if they have three cars, add a fourth for the Indy 500? Like we see so many teams like McLaren, three full-time, they have a fourth. Andretti, three full-time, they have a fourth. Ganassi has five full time. Obviously,
well, you're only protecting
three. They would only get three charters.
You're only protecting a certain amount. Like, yeah, there's only certain charters. But I would argue there's not very many teams showing up for Indy only anyway now. So what are we protecting? The one offs are mostly existing teams.
Yeah,
that are adding cars.
But I guess that's my point, is because you're eliminating the avenue for one off entries to join the sport. I mean, the only one-off year-to-year entry that is even remotely competitive that we see on a year-to-year basis that's not affiliated with a full-time team is Ryan Reinbold.
But isn't that proving the point that these, oh, you're hurting the one-offs? There's only one-off that one legitimate one-off that even tries it each year. So what are we taking away?
That it's already exclusive enough. Also,
why does it hurt then?
Because that's hurting. Like, if you want bumping, you're not going to get it outside of the 10 full-time teams.
But we hardly have bumping now, though. That's my thing. It's like, we hardly have it now. So what are we really eliminating? Again, if we had consistently 36, 40 cars, then it's a different conversation, but we don't. We can't even consistently have 36. We get excited if we have 34. So there's not a lot of teams lining up to try to make the Indianapolis 500 anyway.
And but you have 2 weeks of practice to figure it out.
Which is not a lot of time.
It's
compared to what it used to be.
It's plenty of time considering that the car is from 2012.
Well, that's true. Well, but maybe that's another advantage. Maybe the greater problem, let's open this up, is why more teams don't look to be one-offs is because the existing teams have had so damn long with this chassis and this formula that it is near impossible in 2 weeks to be competitive for a new team. I think maybe that's a conversation you can have.
Now, in 2025, in theory, we'll have hybrid units added on, which this is where it's like a catch-22, right? They've had forever and a day with the current chassis and engine formula. So they have the advantage because they have just insane amounts of data.
Right.
But then you throw in a new thing, and in theory, if you're a new team, you're like, oh, cool, there's a new variation. But the problem is, those new variations cost a lot of money, right? So having the hybrid costs a lot of money for a one-off entry. So that makes the price to enter even harder come next year for these one-off entries.
Yeah, I think there's so many different avenues to discuss here other than just saying, which I think a lot of people were just emotional, be like, oh, you can't get rid of, you can't make this rule because what about all the one-offs and the excitement of bump day? And I'm like, look at it like, over the last 6 to 8 years, how much drama have we had on bump day? I mean, you have Kaiser bumping yourself in. You have Ray Hall missing the race, but because some years we haven't even had bumping.
And for all the talk about Kaiser, you know, bumping out Alonso.
This is fascinating. You told me this.
Yeah.
That was the last race he's been in.
Yes. In IndyCar. Kyle Kaiser has not competed in an IndyCar race since the 2019 Indy 500.
And you could argue
Fernando Alonso competed in the 2020 Indy 500. Now, granted, that only had 33 entries, and they clearly had like a two-year deal
right
with that iteration of that program. But yeah, that was the last IndyCar race he competed in.
I think there are other parts of this story. I understand the traditionalists that very, you know, the sanctity of the Indianapolis 500, blah, 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 which I really kind of just don't buy into because so many other things have been changed. What's one more? My opinion, if there were 40 cars a year and 4, 5, 6, 7 one-off teams showing up to the Indianapolis 500 every May, then maybe I'm taking a different attack, but you're not. There aren't a lot of one-offs. The majority of one-offs come from existing teams. Maybe if they do this charter, let's take this route, and you say you have all these teams with 2 to 3 cars, but maybe they can't add extra cars. And then you open that up to one-offs. I mean, would that be a compromise? Maybe, but you need something else or some other things to lure single or one-off teams back to the 500. This doesn't ruin that because you've already really, you look at the entry list the last several years, there's just not a lot of them anyway. Other things have led to the fact that you don't have a lot of teams in May.
Well, and the simplest fix is guaranteeing more money for making the race to non-leader circle teams.
And somehow, whether it's a third OEM or what, allowing more engine leases. I think if next year Honda and Chevy said we're going to offer 40 engines per, and I think you would have 40 entries.
Yeah.
Or at least like 38. I really think you would.
But like, look at the difference here. 31st, 32nd, and 33rd in payout from last year's Indy 500. So Catherine Legg, one-off entry for Ray Hall. But again, non-leader circle entry, $102,000. Now, she's not pocketing that $102,000. She's getting a percentage of that. She probably also got money from sponsors. So she'd be lucky to bring home half that amount, right? RC Enerson, $103,000. Again, non-leader circle, one-off entry. Stingray Rob, Dale Coyne Racing with Rick Ware Racing at the time last year, obviously now with Foyt, $463,000.
Because he's
Grosjean in 30th, $462,000.
Because he's a full-timer.
Yes. So if you guarantee more money to start, and I don't know what that number is, I mean, you guarantee $500,000, right,
where
to
does,
start.
Where does
Where's
that money
the money
come from?
Right?
That's my thing.
So
it comes from leader circle. You get rid of leader
circle.
Say
you have $250,000 to start guaranteed, you'll get more of these one-off entries. There's not enough incentive because, like, I've heard stories and read stories where drivers who did a one-off entry, like, were lucky to break even on the Indy 500 one-off entry when all was said and done.
So and that's the thing. So
the financial model is already broken.
Yeah,
the charter is not going to help the one-off entries suddenly be fixed in terms of the financials.
But and it's also, that's not the impetus of going to drive single car entries away. Because they're already being driven away, whether it's a lack of money for even starting the race, whether it's not being able to get a engine lease, there's already a series of things that are limiting opportunities for one-offs that doesn't include guaranteed spots for the full-timers. But you come around to it, back around, and you look at it and you say, Penske Corp is responsible to the fans and the team owners. They need to make the team owners as lucrative as possible, making as much money as possible and making those charters as valuable as possible, because in a way that raises the value of your series. And that's kind of what I'm just trying to explain, the other side and why they would be looking at this, because I think some people look at it as they're ruining the 500 and Roger Penske's the devil and how would they do this? The sanctity of the 500, blah, 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 all that normal stuff. You have to step back and look at this series as a fledgling series and trying to protect its biggest investors, which are the team owners.
So to look at how NASCAR is doing this, so they have the charter system. There are 36 charters for full-time entries. Well, they just let their charter negotiating period between the teams and NASCAR expire without another extension. Talks are going to continue into the 2024 season without an agreement. And this comes after they signed nearly $8 billion, billion with a B, worth of agreements from 25 through 2031. It's part of their new TV package with Fox, NBC, the CW, Amazon, and Warner Brothers Discovery. So I guess, like, this is where I have pause with this charter thing, because look, a top level IndyCar entry, 8 to 10 million a year, right? That's kind of the number.
Yes.
For Cup, it's double. It's 20 million for a Cup car. That's on the high end. Yes, it is double the races. So
it's about the same amount of money, like, per race, if you don't know about this. Yes.
So, but if they're having trouble with their system and they have actual TV dollars coming in that are going to teams, that are going to tracks to help, you know, offset costs and whatnot that IndyCar simply doesn't have, that NASCAR has, and they're having issues with this, I don't know if this is a sustainable model. That's my concern.
No, I get it. I think the team owners are looking for some sort of guarantee of the value of their spots on the grid and trying to monetize that. And the series would like that too. But, you know, coming around to, you know, we're a week and a half away from the Daytona 500, and you can bet the 36 charter members will all have guaranteed spots in the Daytona 500. It doesn't take anything away, in my opinion, from the race itself. I think maybe we kind of got to look at that too, is, you know, the diehards, yeah, we love bump day, all that stuff, but really in the big sense and scheme of things, how big is it to the event in general? And it's really not. It's kind of, you know, last week when we had the Andretti issue in Formula One, and one day later we have the Lewis Hamilton news to Ferrari. What was the bigger narrative across the country and across the world?
Hamilton.
It was Hamilton. So us diehard race fans are all about Andretti, Andretti, how do you do this to Andretti? But the casual fan, They're all about Lewis Hamilton. I heard it on I was listening to Xfinity on like the pop rock station. And they bring it up. If you're big into auto racing, you know, look at our auto racing channels. You mean
SiriusXM?
SiriusXM. I got it on the pop rock station after listening to Matchbox 20, the DJ 90s comes on.
9?
Yeah, they come on and talk about the drama that's going on in auto racing and bring up Mercedes and Ferrari and Lewis Hamilton. They don't say anything about Andretti being spurned in Formula One, okay, the day before.
Well, to be clear, disclosure, SiriusXM, owned by Liberty Media, which promotes
F1. But I don't think that woman's getting be told that you can't say anything. I would say, you know, it's been... If the Andretti thing was as big as the Lewis Hamilton news for casual fans, it would have been mentioned. But it's not. It's a non-starter for casual fans of auto racing. It's big for us. So then conversely, we look at bumping full-time teams at the Indianapolis 500. It's big for us. It's big for diehards and those that have gone to the race for 50 years and qualifying. But in terms of casual fans, nobody really cares. Okay? I mean, just... And when you look at it in terms of trying to protect, again, keep saying it, your biggest investors, you may go out and spend thousands of dollars a year going to IndyCar races and traveling and hotels and all that stuff. It is a bare mere pinprick to what these full-time team owners are spending for your series to effectively make your series a thing by investing in it. And I think they deserve some amount of protection.
Here's my thing. You have chassis that are from 2012. You have 2 weeks of practice. You have all the data, all the assets. You run every race. Like, there is no excuse for them to not make it. And ultimately, when you look back in history, within the last 30 years, Bobby Rahal, he missed the race, right? In 93.
Penske missed the race.
Miller did not just leave, right? Miller came back as a sponsor. They didn't go anywhere.
Well, I think it's a different time, too. We're trying to compare
Penske
that.
Penske and Marlboro, right? They didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, but we're talking about the golden
Aero
age.
Aero and Hinchcliffe, they didn't go anywhere. DHL, when Hunter had to buy his way in, right? Yeah, they made that move, but they stayed on. And I get that Andretti says, well, we had to buy our way in to keep them on board. Well, they did it. He made the race. And guess what? He didn't do anything in the 2011 500. Outside of maybe a mention at the start of the race, right? Oh, this guy who won it. Long Beach the year before, and I forget if he had won a race that season at that point, but like you're starting the back of the pack, it doesn't mean anything.
But I think too is like you're bringing up the who's who, the top end of the field. Let's talk about
the who's who are the full-time drive. I mean, Graham Rahal and United Rentals, they're back.
Yeah, but I'm talking about like Coyne. If one or two of their cars would miss the race, that's devastating. Ed Carpenter Racing, Foyt. I think those teams are going to be just as much for it.
Well, those teams have had third entries that have missed the race.
Right. But I'm talking about their regular full-time entries is what I'm talking. That's why the absurdity of adding extra cars when you're not a good team anyway is stupid. That's another story.
The path that IndyCar is on right now, and people have speculated this, is not anything new that I'm bringing up, is that the Indy 500 eventually is just going to go to a weekend event where you have practice and qualifying on the Friday, you have the parade and the driver's meeting and Legends Day all on Saturday, and then you have the race on Sunday.
You've already gone from a month to 2 weeks. Is you really hurting anything? I don't think it ever goes to just a weekend because you have carb day and all that stuff the week before and concerts. There's a lot of money that IMS is making the weekend.
But what's the incentive for people to show up at qualifying?
Well, barely anybody showing up now. I mean, I know the crowd was decent last year, but we're not talking about
their best crowds since 2016.
They're still going to be bumping. You're just not going to have... I just feel like I look at qualifying...
Why would I show up if I'm a one-off entry knowing that there are 25 spots guaranteed? Huh, ironic. We haven't even talked about that part. But there are 25 spots guaranteed... and probably another five other spots that are third or fourth entries of full-time chartered teams.
But my thing is nobody's showing up now for different reasons.
Yeah.
But I'm saying like nobody's showing up now. So what's the difference?
I think we're going to agree to disagree.
No, I know, but it's
I don't think we're going to
I get it.
To solve
like,
anything.
Yeah.
Here.
Well, we're not trying to, we're just trying to entertain here. But, my thing, like I see the other side, and to me, like My favorite part of May is bumping. Okay. For yeah. sure. We haven't had a lot of bumping over the last 10 years. We've had some great moments.
We've had have yes. been iconic yes. moments.
And that wouldn't necessarily go away. Maybe. I mean, cause the great moments in bumping history over the past decade have been few and far between. It's not like every year has been Kaiser versus McLaren, you know, or
well, you had
or
a lot of years Ray where last year. Simply it's been 33 entries.
Exactly. So you're not gaining anything anyway. So that's kind of my thing is if you were taking it away, potentially taking it away when you had 36 to 40 plus cars that were showing up, then it would be a problem. But my thing is you don't. And that's why we go back to saying, well, you have an old chassis and all that stuff and all that. I think that's a problem and how much it costs and how much it pays. Those are the core problems of why you don't have teams showing up as opposed and as well as not being able to get engine leases. If you fix that, I think you have more teams. But it's just difficult. I think there's just a variety of factors. But if all of a sudden they came out and there's only basically eight spots open, I could still see 15 entries showing up for those eight spots. If you had a new chassis, if you paid more, I don't necessarily think it takes that away. In my opinion.
We shall see. I guess the future to me is cutting it back another week and making it a 1 week event and eventually going to a 1 week in event because look, fans go to qualifying for two things, speeds, which we've had the last few years. And that's yeah. why
drama.
Yeah. That's why attendance has been up and then drama. Yep. Which you had with the Ray Hall team last year in terms of yeah. bump day.
Could you see or would you be for a compromise where each team is guaranteed two of their cars in the 500? So if you run three, if you run four, that doesn't matter. But two of your cars are guaranteed.
I'd be more interested in that because it opens up the playing field.
I think that's a way to appease both sides, I feel.
Yes. And I get everyone saying fastest 33. I understand that, but... It's not always the fastest 33 anyway, because you have speeds change drastically yeah. from Saturday to Sunday.
How many times do you have the 30th car faster than the 17th place car?
Happens all the time.
Yes, it absolutely happens all the time because of conditions. So I think to be honest, you know, there's other issues that I have with qualifying. The fact that where you qualify is very much hinged on random draw on when you go, whether it's at what 11 a.m. or 4 p.m. And that's basically it. You only get really one chance. And then you know, for all that, there's other issues that I have, but, you know, we're going to agree to disagree on a fair amount of things, but I could see a compromise where you're saying, okay, all of our full tied teams, you will have your top two cars protected in making the race.
We want to know what you think, because I know you have thoughts.
We know you have thoughts, and probably yelling at your whatever you listen to this show with, yelling at me in particular. I'm here for it.
Let us know. You can find us newtrackrecordpodcast.com. While you're there, check out the store. We have t-shirts. We have stickers for sale. Also, sign up for the email list. It is free. You'll get emails after every new episode is released and any special announcements. You can reach us on social media, IndyCar Podcast on Twitter/X, on Instagram, on Facebook, just search for New Track Record. You can email us your thoughts, newtrackrecordpodcast@gmail.com. You can support us via Patreon, patreon.com/newtrackrecord. Thanks to Xavier and others for their support, starting at just $1 a month. Season's ramping up. If you want to support us, please feel free to do so on there. And you can always download and listen for free on your favorite podcasting platform, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google for now, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts, Pocket Casts, Overcast, CastBox, again, all for free. Mailbag time, and of course, our listeners have thoughts on this and other news stories in IndyCar within the last week. So we go back to earlier in the week and where things stand, and we get to some of our mailbag thoughts. And we start off with starting spots. So the first one, run_mark_run, feels like 1997 all over again. Yeah, that's where they started 35 cars because they screwed up. And then they screwed up in the race.
They did.
USAC.
You know what? If we went to a system where the 34 or 35 that showed up started, I wouldn't have a problem with that. I know everybody's about 11 rows of three. But you know what? If you have 35 cars show up, 34, just start them all.
There has to be some sort of cap. I don't know what it is, but I mean, they started 40 cars, right? For the Indy 500 for the first one.
Right.
And that was pretty standard early on. Now I mean, I get it. It's different now.
Yeah. Before the tradition of 11 rows of three, it's got to be 11 rows of three, blah, blah, blah. Once again, I don't think that's protecting the teams. When you have 34, just start them all. There's no reason to bump one car.
Ben Smith for real says, did they learn nothing from Tony's 25-8 experiment? You said, what bumping? Hashtag I said it because I tweeted on the account. This will end bumping in Indy 500 only entries, which I still firmly believe that. Poet Shevchenko says, charters only to give money to teams that are leaving and put new teams at a disadvantage. NK Harden says, I said it a few years ago and I'll say it again. Bumping happens every year between 5 to 8 drivers. It just doesn't happen on the track. It happens in meetings with sponsors, teams, drivers. Ryan Hunter-Reay and Daly bump Stephen Wilson from the 2024 500. Not as exciting, but every bit the work. That is a valid point.
It is very true.
There are people jockeying behind the scenes, and that's
what money they can bring.
That's an iteration of bumping, right? Yeah. Just like last year, it was Catherine Legg bumping. Who was it who was bumped out? Well, Hunter-Reay was believed to be at Rahal, right? And bumped him out of that spot, and then he landed a ride late with Ryan Reinbold. So that is how bumping, I guess, works now. Beans B Card Blog said, I truly believe IndyCar needs to be smart and not do this. You're talking about something that will be about as popular as that WWE is dealing with in this Rock Cody Rhodes situation. I'm starting to think less and less of the powers that be in IndyCar. Here's the thing, and we didn't talk about this, but they could just be floating this out there, giving Nathan Brown the access for the story.
Yeah.
Taking a look at the reaction, taking that into account, and figuring out a plan and maybe modifying it from there.
Which I think would be a good idea for the series. I think there's a way to both appease the fans and give greater value to spots on the grid and help these teams. Because not all of them are McLaren. Not all of them are just swimming in money, okay? You have teams out there that are losing money. And I think the series is wise to think about your teams. Without teams, you have no series. And yes, we've heard overtures from this team or that team of coming in the series, but we're not talking about, you know, a whole big line of teams trying to get into the series. Okay. So you need to protect not just your McLarens and your Andretti's, but also your Coins and Ed Carpenters and Foyts and teams like that. And I think this is a way to help them a little bit. Is it, the direction that a lot of people want to see it go? No, but I understand why the series is looking at it. I don't think this is just to give a big middle finger to your fans. I think there's a reason why they're looking into this, but based on the response, I imagine the series would be like, you know what? At least in that form, we can't go forward to it. Like you mentioned, how do they adapt it to try to please everyone?
Jeff Cerneski says, I think the fan outcry will stop this from happening. I think a better proposal would be to tie Leader Circle to the charter system. If a team has a charter, they receive that payment. And maybe that's the alternative, right? Yep. Maybe you increase the number of Leader Circle spots, which we currently believe is what, 22, and you make it 24 or 26, and then you go from there. Now, would that discourage more full-time entries? Yes, but I actually don't think that's the worst thing. We don't have an issue of having full-time entries in the series. Yep. We have an issue of excess entries on race weekends, but not enough for the only race that needs more excess entries.
Yeah. I mean, maybe the protected cars are your Leader Circle cars. I think that would make sense.
Yeah. Rob_McMahon quoted this, was very happy with a GIF I can't really describe. During the brief periods when drivers elect to engage both push-to-pass power contributions, they'll have upwards of 850 horsepower, which will mark the first time IndyCars have surpassed the 800 horsepower threshold since the kart champ car era in the 2000s. That referencing Marshall Pruitt, Racer.com, having an article talking about the hybrid systems and the horsepower output that they could have. Again, that in conjunction with push-to-pass at the same time.
Yes, which so, is... A big
exciting stuff.
And a lot of the discussion with Willpower, the quotes I saw was just being able to, coming out of a corner, just being able to put pedal to the metal and really get pickup coming out of corners, which will be exciting.
So that is the mailbag. Thanks to everyone for their submissions. Don't forget, you can always tweet us, Facebook message us, send us a message on Instagram, email us through all the channels, and we'll get to your thoughts the following week on the mailbag. All right, time for news and notes, and we still have plenty to get to.
Yes, a lot to get to.
That's the thing. So we start with silly season news. The first hardcore piece of news, Indy Lights, Kyle Collette. He will compete with HMD Motorsports in that series. He's a Brazilian former Alpine Academy member.
I've never heard of him, but he's well regarded.
Yeah. Spent the past 3 years in FIA F3, won 3 races, 11 podiums. So a lot of success. So another driver locked in. And I need to look up to see exactly where we're at and confirmed.
Well, HMD's has 38.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. HMD, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 full-time entries. And then their 10th entry is a partnership with Force Indy for Miles Rowe. So 10 full-time entries. You have 4 with Andretti Global, 2 with Able, so that's 16. You have Andretti Cape as they merge to form a partnership. They have 1, so that's what, 17?
Uh-huh.
You have Juncos has 1 confirmed with Lindsey Brewer. That's 18. We expect them to have a second. That would be 19. Miller Vinatieri Motorsports with Jack Miller, the son of Dr. Jack Miller. That would make 20. So 20 entries is absolutely realistic. If Juncos has a second, there will be 20 entries. We could even have 21 if there's a second Andretti Cape entry.
What did we start the year with last year? Do you remember? It was high teens?
Last year at the first race, let's take a look.
St. Pete. I thought there was one car that didn't start at St. Pete.
You have 19 that were at St. Pete.
Okay, and I think there was one that was supposed to be at St. Pete, but for whatever reason didn't. So around the same number, but if you can push north of 20 for the majority of races, exceptional. Remember those days when we started 8 or 9 lights?
Yeah.
Seems like a long time ago.
Yes, it does. And that was like, what, only a decade or so ago?
I mean, less. God bless HMD.
Yeah. Now, when they expand IndyCar, you hope that doesn't take away.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean,
not that they need to be running 10 full-time entries, but
even
hopefully
if
they run
to
5.
Right. I mean,
or
but
6.
It's like if you go down to 3, then you're back at 13 entries. So there's a lot being put on the shoulders of HMD in terms of lights, for sure.
So that is the confirmed news. And on the IndyCar side, MarshallProRacer.com putting out an article today as we record Thursday evening here in the U.S., February 8th. The latest update on Coyne. So they tested Jack Harvey and Nolan Siegel and Homestead on the Roval. Jack was in the simulator this week, according to Dale Coyne. Essentially, the way this stands, now Siegel is already confirmed for Light, so he's not racing with them, but they seem very impressed. And Pruitt says, if rumors are true, the teenage Californian could already be scheduled for his IndyCar debut with Dale Coyne Racing in 2025. So keep that in mind for the future. Pruitt also says recent speculation regarding a part-time return to Dale Coyne Racing for Takuma Sato was recently put to rest, but the concept of Coyne splitting one of his entries between an oval specialist like the 2-time Indianapolis 500 winner and a dedicated road racer continues to make the rounds. So also drivers from F2 to IMSA on the team's radar. Remember Colin Braun, right? Mentioned in the off season. I would think he'd have to come up with some funding. Devlin DeFrancesco has been mentioned, but he's not tested with the team. His name's not mentioned in this article. Jack Harvey's name is mentioned.
He needs money.
I think he needs more money than what he has for a full-time effort.
Yes.
I think where it stands, it's probably road and street courses and maybe Indy 500. That's kind of the gist that I took away from this article.
Or maybe a half season and hopefully more money is found post 500 to keep racing races, something like that. Siegel was impressive to me last year in lights, but he's still a year away. And then you look at Harvey that needs money. So where does this end up? I still think we're in for somewhat of a surprise. Could it be Colin Braun? I think would be a bit of a surprise, but I really think, you know, when it comes to TBA at Coyne, you never know what's going to happen. At any time, somebody could bring a fat check that completely comes out of left field and changes the game for Coyne. So we'll see. I think Jack Harvey ends up being one of the drivers, whether it's a confirmed full-time or let's race through the 500 and see where we're at. But that second seat is still going to be pretty interesting.
And let's not discount someone from F2 who decides to leave that because they have money and they could race full-time in IndyCar. I mean, let's not discount that, but
kind of coming up against it though for an F2 driver, unless they currently don't have a seat in F2.
So we'll see what happens with this. I mean, Enzo Fittipaldi tested with him, but remember he's back in F2, so that's no longer on the table. But maybe we'll have an answer on this come next week.
They're getting closer, but you know, Coyne loves to wait for the 11th hour.
You got to shake the couch cushions.
Yeah, well, you do. I think Coyne's most exciting portion of the day is going out and checking his mailbox to see if somebody just sent a $5 million check and says, I want to be in the seat with Coyne this year.
I mean, why not, right?
Yeah, just he goes, you know what? Yeah, we still got a couple weeks. We got a month or so until St. Pete. Plenty of time for somebody to come out of the woodwork with a big check.
Some livery reveals. Aero McLaren did all of their livery reveals. You have Rossi, you have Pato O'Ward, you have David Malukas. Which car was your favorite? I think they all look really good.
Yeah, and you put them side by side, you can tell the difference. But to me, when I'm looking at it, I'm like, yeah, okay, kind of looks like the other one that looks like the other one.
Well, you have Pato, which is black and orange. You have Rossi, which is a little bit of orange, but mostly black and white. And then you have Malukas, which is a lot of blue and orange.
I gotta go with Pato. I like
Pato's just a classic look, and since that's been the look for his car for most of the time, and I get they make slight variations, I do like that one the best. Rossi's car looks good. Malukas's car looks good. I like that blue.
Yeah,
that bright blue.
No, I agree.
They all look good. You have Pietro Fittipaldi in his car. It is very purple.
Very
purple
much so.
Purple and black. Oakberry Acai and Pinu Store. I think that's how you say
Never
it.
Never heard of any of them.
I haven't
either.
What's
the last like heavy purple full-time car?
Dale Coyne Racing with the Nurtec car.
That's true. I keep thinking about
Sato.
And I keep thinking about Charlie Kimball's cars. He had some purple ones in there, didn't he? When he was doing
I think so.
When he was doing the
Traceba or Traceba,
whatever it was for his
diabetes
sponsor.
Medication.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there were some purples in there.
Kyle Larson, we've already seen his livery, but he did some testing. He tested at Phoenix International Raceway, including a slide job saying he almost spun out. We did learn as far as his engineer, so we have, and some other people are part of the timing stand. So Mike Pawlowski will work with Larson at the next test. He will be the engineer for the race, but then also on Larson's timing stand, this from racer.com, Hendrix Brian Campy, who will turn to IndyCar. Mm-hmm. He'll be the car communicator. He'll speak with Larson throughout the race. He's worked in NASCAR. He's worked in IndyCar. He's back in NASCAR again. So some familiarity there for Larson.
If you look ahead to 2025 and Hendrick's role in, I guess it's going to be another year of Larson, right? For 2025.
Yes.
Let's say 2026. If you look ahead and what Hendrick's role is in Indy 500, what do you think it is? Is it still just maybe running somebody? Is it nothing? Is it grow into a added entry with McLaren, or maybe a co-entry, or even an existing entry that they co? Where do you think this is going? Because Brian Campy has been around.
Yeah.
Could you see him maybe being the centerpiece of a Hendrick IndyCar effort at some point?
Maybe. I don't know. I just have my doubts on these things only because we've seen this so many times, right? We saw Tony Stewart partner with, at the time, Schmidt Peterson, and that didn't lead to anything after that. And everyone thought, when's Tony going to do an IndyCar team, right? And it's never happened.
At this point, I don't know if he's ever going to do an IndyCar
team. I don't think so.
Unless Foyt came up for sale or something.
Yeah. And but, maybe that's the play. I don't know. But I have my doubts.
We'll see about Hendrick, because I think there's something there that could turn into something. It could be nothing. But they're having some overtures for sure with McLaren, and we'll see where it goes. But it all starts with, of course, Kyle Larson this year.
You have Linus Lundqvist's livery reveal in the number 8 American Legion Honda for Chip Ganassi Racing. It looks similar to last year, but it's a good-looking car.
Yep.
Some other news. Scott McLaughlin, his red, black, and yellow Sunseo car was unveiled at Vegas, and then they were in Denver, Colorado. It's part of an Indy 500 event earlier this week, which I think is fascinating. That was at Sunseo in Denver. So at their, but we talk all the time, right? There was discussion in the offseason about, you know, a race, and we thought about Salt Lake City. What if it's Denver?
Mm.
I don't know, just throwing it out there.
There have been discussions or like, you know, behind the scenes. They've raced at Denver before.
Yeah.
In terms of a road course. So my brother lives about an hour outside of Denver. And if I visit him this year again, I'll head to the capital city, see what I can drum up. Maybe meet with some movers and shakers there. But I do think something in the West at some point, either Salt Lake City or Denver, I think within 4 years, I think we see a street race in one of those cities.
Yeah, I think so. That's an area that's expanding that you got to tap that market, and hopefully IndyCar can do that. This is no surprise, but the CW has renewed IndyCar's 100 Days to Indy docuseries for a second season. And we'd covered this before, but we have more details for IndyCar fans in the UK, Canada, Latin America, the Caribbean, Australia, Italy, France, Germany, Switzerland, Austria, South Korea, and Japan coming in April. Season one of 100 Days to Indy is available on Paramount Plus, streaming on February 16th. Now, as Nathan Brown points out, fans in Spain, Sweden, and New Zealand, where Paramount Plus isn't available, Penske Entertainment working for other options. Pretty unfortunate because you have Marcus Ericsson, Alex Palou, and Scott McLaughlin, and Scott Dixon among the drivers.
Kind of an issue.
Right? I mean, like, let's not overlook that.
I mean, we can name all the countries that they are being able to watch it, but how about the ones that can't?
Yeah. Pretty key countries for IndyCar.
Yeah, you'd think. Let's do that. So when's it coming out?
February 16th.
So what day is it? February 8th.
That's next Friday.
So I'm going to open up Paramount Plus and see if there's any type of coming soon or anything. Okay, we got Halo on here.
Halo's coming after the Super Bowl. Not sure if you're aware.
Yeah. Is it? Oh, it comes out immediately after the Super Bowl, the day?
I think so.
I've watched half of season one, but I digress. Okay, so if I go to sports. Let's see, or docuseries. Let's do this. Nothing yet. How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. That's it. So there is nothing yet, not even a preview yet on Paramount Plus. We'll keep an eye on it, though.
Which is unfortunate because you have the Super Bowl, which will stream on Paramount Plus coming up on Sunday. You just hope you get a little bit of something on there. Like, I'm not expecting them to promote it on the broadcast. They're not going to. But just something.
Unfortunately, I think just it'll appear there on the 16th. There won't be much hubbub about it.
Other notes, you have concert announcements. First off, for Legends Day, Riley Green will perform on May 25th at the amphitheater at White River State Park. Country artist, I'll admit I've never heard of him, but tickets on sale starting as we record tomorrow. So tickets on sale 10 a.m. Eastern, February 9th. Also, concerts for Hy-Vee IndyCar Weekend. They ran out the lineup. Kelsey Ballerini and Eric Church. Eric Church post-race on Saturday, July 13th. Kelsey Ballerini post-race Sunday, July 14th. And then the pre-race on Saturday is Luke Combs. The pre-race on Sunday is Post Malone. I mean, this is the best lineup they have had.
They absolutely have. I mean, Kelsey Ballerini and Eric Church are both top five country artists right now. And then you put in Post Malone and Luke Combs, and those are top five artist period right now in the United States. So an absolute great four shows that'll come up at Iowa. And as you and I have said, we don't care if you're going for the music, if you're going for the racing, if you're going for the fact that you love Iowa in summer, we don't care as long as you're buying tickets. And hopefully Iowa can sell a lot of tickets.
IndyCar has trading cards. They released this today with Parkside Collectibles, a 3-year deal.
These are cool.
These are cool. I've actually already ordered a couple packs. They're available for pre-order right now. It will launch March 1st. You said things ship March 14th,
March
right?
14th,
so just
yep.
After the season opener at St. Pete. They have a ton of things available. So the breakdown of this from Kevin D. Motors. 162 base driver cards, 72 marquee moments, 17 race events, 37 pit passes, 10 Indy Lights drivers, 22 helmets, 14 iconic moments, 16 podiums, 3 relics, 4 redemptions. So you have 357 different cards.
Wow.
And 27 different driver signed options available.
That's pretty darn cool. Because I thought originally when this came out, it's like, okay, it's going to be every driver's card and you buy them as a set and it's 25, 30 drivers and that's it. But this is actual, you know, you're going to buy a pack unless you buy them all.
And a pack comes with 25 cards. Yeah. They're $10.
You can get duplicates if you buy multiple packs, and you're, you know, you can try to trade and all this. It's really cool. I am shocked at the depth of cards that they have. I would even look at it. I would love to see like classic cars and classic races on there, but this is a hell of a start.
And this is a great way to get kids and younger people involved. Look, trading cards are cool again.
Yeah.
They're cool in the 80s and 90s into the early 2000s, kind of went away. Pandemic on.
Right.
They've been very popular. So props to IndyCar for getting this done. And then speaking of the younger audience, I know you're gonna hate this, uh-oh, but Sebastian Weldon joining USF Juniors Championship with Andretti. He'll compete with VRD Racing, but Andretti Development Driver. And already some good news. He got the win in race one.
I saw he was on the podium.
For a winter series.
Yeah.
And had two podium finishes. And not to be outdone, younger brother Oliver, who is the baby in Dan Weldon's 2011 Indy 500 pictures.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to believe.
Yeah.
He will also make his racing debut in the 24 Skip Barber race series, also supported by Gamebridge, also an Andretti Development Driver.
I love that the boys are following in their dad's footsteps. I just wish the spotlight wasn't on them as much.
Understandable. And then Connor Daly, if you've ever wondered if he can play basketball, well, you can find out. He will take part in the Celebrity Game coming up next Friday,
ooh,
February 16th, 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. He will be representing IndyCar in the Celebrity Game at the NBA All-Star Weekend, of course, in Indianapolis next weekend.
Very
so
nice.
Pretty cool. And with that, it is time for our random split error driver of the week.
All right, so we're delving deeper into the mid-2000s, and we're going back to the IndyCar series in 04. And it is, we're getting into some different guys, some different names, but we're going this week with Mark Taylor.
Oh,
Mark Taylor.
Blast from the past.
Yes, he was. And we're talking about a guy from England. We're talking about Dan Weldon. And Mark Taylor, also from England, Wimbledon, London, England, to be exact, raced in 2004 for Panther Racing and Access Motorsports. I don't remember Access Motorsports, do you?
I don't either.
Me neither. So it was 2004 is when he started 15 races. He raced in the year before, in 2003, for Panther Racing in the Infinity Pro Series and won 7 races and won the championship in the Infinity
Dominated.
Pro Series in that year. But then he was with Panther Racing to start 2004, went half the season, and had a high finish at the first part of the season of 12th. And that was, man, you talk about the opportunities for guys that win lights that may not be there. He, like we said, we mentioned, he dominated the Infinity Pro Series and only got 6 races with Panther Racing in 2004. He was done after the race at Richmond and then raced the second half of the season with Access Motorsports.
That was Greg Ray's team.
Okay, that makes a little bit more sense. His best finish was 7th at both Nashville and Texas 2. Texas 2 is the final race of the season. He was unable to repeat his qualifying performances from earlier in the season with Access Motorsports, but showed maturity in the car to finish 7 of his 9 races, best finish of 7th. He struggled in qualifying, as we mentioned, in the first part of the season with Panther, and he was struggling to adapt, and he was involved in accidents in 5 of his 6 starts, including the Indianapolis 500, before he was dropped in favor of Townsend Bell for the second half of the season. So he cost Panther Racing a lot of money in through the first 6 races, and then kind of came into his own with Access Motorsports in the second half of the season. But that was it. He was done racing after that. He raced in Formula 3, the British Formula 3 Championship, prior to coming over to the States. But in terms of his Wikipedia page, he was done after 2004. So one season and done in the IndyCar series. Still with us, still young. Mark Taylor is still just 46 years old, but drove in 2004 for 2 different teams. And that was it. 15 starts, high of 7th at both Nashville and Texas 2. This week's random split era driver of the week, Mr. Mark Taylor.
And from that Indy 500 in 2004, we still have Elio Castroneves, Scott Dixon, and Ed Carpenter
racing.
And that Indy 500 featured Brian Herta. We obviously have Colton Herta racing now. So it's just pretty crazy. The connections from 20 years ago still in the series.
Pretty wild, isn't it?
Yeah.
And collect their trading cards.
Yeah.
Through IndyCar's website. I hope that those are on sale different places too.
If those aren't trackside, that's an issue. True. Which I'm sure they will be.
Yeah, I'm sure they will be. I would love to see them, you know, just in a run-of-the-mill place. I mean, it's Indiana. Come on, just put them with the Pokemon cards and the sports cards at Target and stuff. I think it'd be pretty cool.
I agree. So I'm excited about that. And I'm excited for next week because hopefully we have our full-time grid figured out. Perhaps
if not,
Dale Coyne Racing fills those TBAs. See.
If not, we will call Dale Coyne live on the show and demand an explanation.
If only. If only. For Justin Kinney, I'm Caleb Hatch. Thanks for joining us on another edition of New Track Record Podcast.
Podcasts by Federated Media.